Hi, welcome to our DC Diversity Dive, a podcast in which our diversity and inclusion team aim to recognize and support cultural practices and celebrations. DC embraces and celebrates equality and diversity. It takes the steps necessary to ensure these values are recognized, for example, through the work of our Diversity and Inclusion Committee and fostering diverse thought. South Asian Heritage Month is a UK event that runs from 18th July to 17th August each year and is now in its third year. It celebrates the heritage of people with roots in the 8 South Asian countries of India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Nepal, Bhutan, and Maldives. South Asian Heritage Month also marks the deeply blended cultures and intricately entwined histories of the UK and South Asia. Having grown up in India, I'm familiar with the history and role of the British Empire in defining everything from the subcontinent's language to the railway networks. With this year's theme being Stories to Tell, today we look to discuss difficulties people face and how to embody our value of be kind. With our guest speakers, Madhavi Taylor, Pancham Taneja, and Shamli Akhtar. So let's just start with a little introduction from ourselves. So myself is Arya Sandosh, and I'm from DC Dublin office. And what about you guys?
I'm from the DC London office, and I'm Madhavi Taylor. I'm a principal consultant in the consultancy branch, and I'm also the founder and global lead of the Women's Network at Delta Capita. On the side, one of my hobbies is I'm a success mindset and empowerment coach for women. And my story is that I was born in Kenya. My parents were second generation immigrants from Western India, and I am a mother of two.
Hi, so I'm Shem. I am from the Birmingham office. I'm a senior analyst. I've not got a proper background like how Madhavi had. I mean, I'm Bengali, but I was born in the UK.
Hi, my name is Pancham. I'm based out of Bangalore, India, and manage the DC business in India. I was born and brought up in New Delhi, which is the north of India and the capital of India. But I've had the privilege of working in various cities across India, like Mumbai, Chennai. And I've been in Bangalore for the last 13 years. So this is what I call home now. As a side note, my name is derived from Sanskrit language and denotes the fifth note of the classical music. And I also recently discovered that Pokemon card is also named Pancham. So I am kind of becoming famous in terms of my name, at least.
I didn't know that, actually. Thank you for sharing that, Pancham. Okay, so what are some key aspects of South Asian culture and heritage that are important to celebrate during this month?
So for me, it's our broad diversity, which includes our faith, language, food, etc. We are culturally a very rich society, and I feel that not all is known. We are probably known for one aspect of our society, maybe the type of music, but we have different forms of music. We have so many languages. So this makes us a very, very broad culture. And I think it is very important that the pluralistic approach of our culture is known. And this month, the SAHM also coincides with the Indian independence, which is August 15th. So it's time to celebrate independence and be thankful for the independence that we have and showing gratitude to people who fought for it. And for me, it's also start of the Indian festival season. After independence, most of the religious festivals start in India. So it's always good to gear up for celebrations, dress up, have good food. So it's good times from here on.
Yes, so absolutely. I agree with Pancham. You know, whenever it's celebrations, you have to include food, music, dance, and dressing up as well. So for me, it's very much like the variety of food we have in the Indian culture. Huge variety of food, which I'm sure everybody is so familiar with. That's really good to include in our celebrations. And then there's also Bollywood music. And these days, there's the fusion between the Eastern and Western music, which is very, very popular. And obviously, wherever there's music, there has to be dancing. And wherever there's dancing, there has to be dressing up. And I think with the dressing up, it comes the traditional attire of dressing up in our cultures. And one of the festivals, like, you know, this is, as Pancham said, this is the trigger for a lot of festivals coming ahead. And one of the festivals is Navratri, where we all dress up in our saris and our colorful outfits. And it's 9 days of dancing and celebration, which is wonderful.
Just touching on what Madhvi said, I absolutely love the dressing up aspect of the South Asian culture. I think that's my favorite part. I also do love the music, but I also love the food aspect. I'm a massive foodie, and my favorite type of food is definitely spicy Indian food. But, you know, there's so many other like distinct types of dishes and styles. Like, for example, I'm Bangladeshi and we have this thing called apple chutney. It's sort of like apple chutney, but it's like sour apples that are finely chopped with finely chopped coriander, green chilies, crushed garlic, and a bit of salt. And it is so delicious. I don't know if you guys have ever had that. If you haven't, then try it because it is delicious. But yeah, like I feel like people outside of Bangladesh don't really know about that, which kind of makes me sad because everyone else is missing out. But yeah, I love the food aspect.
There isn't much of Bangladeshi cuisines around. If you go around and, you know, check for cuisines, that is Italian or that's Spanish and every other thing. But there is not much of Bangladesh, maybe because of that. And actually, I'm allergic to apples, but then that sounds so delicious.
You know what? There's so many variations, like people have it with mango, pineapple, even grapes.
On that, I resonate with the mango one. So Where I was brought up, you know, we didn't have many apples, but we had lots of mangoes.
Every region in India has its own variety of mangoes. So I am from North, and actually, I don't enjoy mango so much, and it's a very non-Indian thing to do. My family loves it, and my wife, being from North, obviously prefers the North Indian varieties, but down South, they obviously try to prove that their varieties are best. So in these 3 months of summer, we have a mango war across India where everybody tries to do one up in terms of the mango variety.
The Pancham in London, when I go to the Indian grocers, he's always telling me, oh, this week we've got mangoes from this region and mangoes from this region. And I'm like, I just want mangoes.
So I can actually send you a map of mangoes India does. And they actually, I'm not kidding, there is a map. And it gets published every year on Twitter because the mango wars happen. So it's a really interesting time to just read about it.
Okay. So next question. So why do you guys think we should celebrate South Asian Heritage Month? Why do you think it's very important?
So I think it's important to celebrate it because it promotes cultural awareness and also understanding. And, you know, it gives people like an opportunity to learn about the diverse cultures and traditions and all of the different stuff that Pancham mentioned from the first question, because there's so much within South Asia and it's not like just one thing, there's so much in it. And I feel like having a month like this just, you know, educates people and all of the different stuff, and also it makes people of South Asian backgrounds feel valued and also respected. If this is done at the workplace, then it also sort of fosters a sense of belonging, pride, and also engagement at work. It's wins all around, and I think it's very important.
That's a great point, actually. I'm based in India, so I don't think I feel so much cut off from the whole thing. But I do feel when I visit different cities or different countries, I do feel anchoring to one's community and beliefs is very, very important if you're there for the long term or even for the short term. And I have friends who work abroad or who stay abroad. For them, it is the passing on of the culture and the belief that we were brought up with, and they want to pass it on to the next generation, is very, very important. I also feel that with the advent of technology, the world has shrunk. We are so much closer now with video calls, instant chats, etc. There is not any more global. I call it glocal, which is a combination of global and local. And South Asians are scattered all over the world. And it's important that we don't lose our identity in the process. For me, it's very important that to fit in, one shouldn't necessarily forget oneself. So hence, the celebration becomes more important because we need to celebrate ourselves wherever we are.
I think, and for me, anything where we've got a specific event and specific time to celebrate, it also kind of gives us a pause from our daily routine. So we can step back and assess, what is it? Why are we celebrating it? And, you know, this pause is so important to break away from our daily routine. And then I think it's really important to, as you, with anything, you have to learn and grow as well. So for me, it's been a chance to have a look at Indian history and just looking at what India's brought to the world. So some of the things I can think of is the yoga and meditation come from India. We've got a whole lot of spices and ancient grains, which is quite talked about at the moment. And then my stuff that I was researching and was curious about all led to aspects of well-being. And finally, I would say the Ayurvedic medicine, the herbal medicine, you know, the traditional medicine. I think all this is really important, and, you know, to go back and re-educate ourselves, to learn about it and take what we can from it.
Absolutely. I think you mentioned about the grains. There is a whole focus on bringing those back from a government perspective as well. I think millets are being promoted in India big time. And I think you just mentioned that we have ancient grains and it's not just rice and wheat. We are now promoting it, health and well-being. Yoga Day has been created internationally. So we've given a world a lot. And I think, Madhini, you're absolutely right that people need to know broadly about us, not just for specific things.
Yeah. So just to add to the Panjam's first point, actually, I was thinking about how, you know, you said it's necessary not to forget oneself. Like the culture actually kind of gives the comfort to each individual. So each individual have different culture, you know, coming from different background. And every time, whenever they embrace a culture, that kind of gives them a comfort too. So I think that's kind of the, you know, important part too. Okay. So let's move on. So what are some common misconceptions or stereotypes about South Asian culture that you think should be addressed?
I think the view of the South Asian community is very narrow, but we are a very, very diverse society with pluralistic faiths, language, and food. I think the stereotype is still that we are not advancing so much. I don't know. Whenever I see TV documentaries, I feel they portray us still as a land of snake charmers. Nothing wrong in being one, actually. It's quite a skill to be one. And then, you know, movies will make us out to be all from call centers, which is not true. So I think they stereotype us in buckets. And then when you meet somebody for the first time, they kind of have the perception of you, which needs to, I think, break. We do all sort of jobs. I think if you see, our artists are all over the world, whether it is Priyanka Chopra or somebody else. We made a mark all across the world. So not just being snake charmers or call center employees.
Yeah, I agree with there are stereotypes like that. Or even in movies, they're always the technician or the IT guy all the time. I feel like one common misconception is when people just assume that all South Asians have the same values, beliefs and customs. Because, you know, as Panchen mentioned, there's so many different types of things. So like languages, cuisines, arts, even religious practices. So yeah, there's a lot of different things. And I think for it to be a one shoe fits all kind of thing, I mean, one size fits all kind of thing, it's not really applicable because there's a lot of variety.
We are so closely linked, but we have our subtle differences as well, which are not known. So I think that is where the stereotype comes. I don't think a common person on the street would understand the difference if you tell them that, you know, oh, I'm from Bangladesh or I'm from India or even from smaller countries like Nepal or Sri Lanka. They probably would not be able to distinguish that. There is more to us than just food, typical Indian food or curry house.
Yeah, so true. Okay. So how has your South Asian family dynamic influenced the way you guys are? Like, how do you think it has helped you or it has misguided you maybe in your path? How do you think?
So I'm the eldest child in my family. And I honestly believe that being the eldest daughter, not even just daughter, but just eldest child in general in an ethnic household can really affect your choices in life and the way that you go about things. Because I feel like with the eldest, there's usually higher expectations placed on them to excel in everything, as was the case for me. And that's sort of all that I've ever known, because throughout my education and career, like, I've always been a high achiever with a very strong work ethic, because I felt as though I'm a role model for my younger siblings. So, you know, therefore, like, I feel responsible to sort of set a positive example for them. And yeah, and also I feel like when you're the firstborn, your parents put a lot into you. So you sort of feel like a duty to like repay them by being, you know, the best that you can be, because you sort of end up being a symbol of family honor and success. I think that and having responsibilities at a young age has definitely made me sort of cultivated a sense of maturity, discipline, leadership skills. It's made me very hardworking, but also very bossy. But yeah, I feel like I do what I do just to set the bar in the hopes that my sisters and my cousins and everyone after me can sort of not match what I've done, but exceed it. So yeah, and truly it's all selfless.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I am the eldest of the two siblings. So I totally agree with what Shem said. You are kind of seen as the person who will take the family forward. So the expectation set kind of becomes heavy or heavier. I became independent at a very young age, actually, because of this. My father had a transferable job. So he used to be not based out of Delhi at times. And my mother was also working. So a lot of responsibilities for the household fell on me, you know, on its own without anybody talking to me that you have to do it. I took it upon myself that, you know, I have to help my mother with all these things. So I was managing the keys to the household. I was buying groceries at a very young age. And what Shem said, it kind of makes you bossy because you are so independent from a very young age that you start making decisions that it carries on in your work life or other life. And it's the same right now as well. Like my family, although my wife works as well, but they look upon me to kind of, you know, make decisions for them. And it hasn't changed. So I think that is how sort of South Asian families, you know, are, and they bring up their kids. And I probably have done this in an indirect manner to my kids as well. Like I have an elder daughter and I expect more from her. So whenever anything goes wrong between my kids, I always go to her and say, I didn't expect this from you. Knowing that fully well that, you know, both of them could have done the same mistake. But it's just a very natural thought that you go to the elder one and tell them that you are more responsible. You should have taken better care of this. So I think it happens naturally to us.
Well, that's interesting viewpoints. And I would say, let's say assertive instead of bossy. So you both Shem and Pancham, you're both assertive, not bossy. So I would say that I'm the middle out of a big family. So I was just left alone. And then on top of that, I was brought up in an extended family with grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins. So one, I was just left alone to pursue my hobbies and studies. And then two, I had, because I didn't have all the chores to take care of, I probably had more time to go and find somebody who had time to answer my many why questions, you know, which we always has with kids. So I think that probably made me quite a curious person from a very young age. So very different to the way you've described your upbringing. And I think the consequence is that as a mom, I'll always ask my kids, I'll always say, if there's something not going their way, then they'll come to me. Or when we have a discussion, I'll say, is it the end of the world? And if the answer is no, don't worry about it. Let's walk through it and find solutions for it. But I think as a parent, because I didn't have that from my family, so I don't think I'm imposing it on my kids. But it's very interesting to hear your views, because if I asked my elder siblings, I think they would share your same views.
Yeah. I probably need to ask my brother how he felt.
I'm also the elder one in my family, so I can relate to Shem and Pancham a lot. Sorry, not with you, Madhavi, but still. Okay. So what do you think are the challenges or obstacles faced by South Asian community in preserving and promoting their heritage?
I think being proud of the background and the faith that you come from is very, very important. We are socially very adaptable people. We are very inclusive, so we adapt to other cultures and we accept them very well. But I also feel that in the bargain, we leave some of ourselves behind. We shouldn't be doing that. I think it should not be a direct set off. We should be fiercely proud of what we are or who we are. And I think I've seen, like, my generation probably saw less of it, but I'm seeing more and more of it now coming to the fore. They're more forthright about being South Asian, being Indian, and they take it with pride. But I think those are challenges which are what I faced, and I think maybe people abroad of my generation still face.
That's a good point. I feel like there's a generational gap between sort of parents and grandparents, versus children now, where, you know, the younger generation, they're more sort of open to embrace local culture and change more than their parents and grandparents would. Like, you know, for example, the younger generation generally now adopt more of a westernized lifestyle, which means, you know, through that, some parts of culture might be washed away or diluted. Like, even with myself, for example, my parents grew up speaking Bengali at home, whereas I've grown up speaking only English. Bengali, I only speak to, you know, certain older family members that don't know English. But if somebody asked me, would I teach my kids Bengali? I'd want to say yeah, but I feel like I don't know enough to teach them. So I feel like even with me, it's sort of being washed away a little bit, which I'm not too happy about. But yeah, it just happens, I guess.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because in my case, I speak multiple dialects of India. That's Gujarati, Hindi, Urdu. But my children don't speak any of them, and I speak in English to my kids. And why do I do that? I question myself. It's because from a young age, when they went to the childminder, they had to learn English, because that's what the childminder or the nursery would speak to them in. So I guess, yeah, that's a big challenge. How do we make sure that the culture and the language is passed on?
I wanted to add to the language bit as well, because it's a bit different in India, because I come from a predominantly Hindi-speaking household. My grandparents spoke Punjabi, and I learned from them how to speak in Punjabi, but I don't speak in Punjabi broadly or widely. I could only speak to them. And when I meet somebody who's speaking, I can speak, but the fluency is not there. But so, like I said, I'm from a broadly Hindi-speaking household, but my parents forced me into English, because at that point of time, it was seen very important from a business perspective to know English. If you wanted to score a good job or have a career, you should know the business language, which India was following. So we were pushed into it. And now I speak in English with my kids at home, which I should. And actually, to Shem's point and to your point, school, my kids' school has actually come back saying that you leave the business side of the language to us. We'll teach them English. We would request you to actually teach them your mother tongue, because it's important that they learn that as well. So the whole dynamic is changing from being pushed into learning English because of business mindset or career mindset to now preserving your own language, and schools requesting that please do so, because we'll take care of the other aspects. So yeah, it's a generational shift.
Very interesting.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're trying not to, you know, kill the language, because it's gonna end, like Shem said, you know, it's not going to pass on to her kids. So they're just trying their best, probably.
Yeah. An important point to note is that, like in my case, and a lot of the immigrants who moved out of India, the first few generations were just surviving. They were in a survival mode. So they had to just get on and make sure they had, you know, enough to survive, basically. But then I think the new generations are now thriving. You know, we have more opportunities. There's more awareness, like what we're doing at the moment. We're creating awareness. There's more fusion in the cultures. So I think it's now changing.
Yeah, totally agree. I think to your point, the first generations of movers gave up on a lot of things, and even their identity to survive, which the newer generations are reaping the benefits of, and they can now cast their eye or put their attention onto other aspects of, you know, life. So it's a great point, and it should help bring some of the culture back.
Absolutely.
Hopefully it will be for the best for everyone. This actually brings me to this question. So what do you guys think an individual can do to support and engage with South Asian Heritage Month, like both from within and outside the South Asian community?
I would say the first thing is just enjoy the event. So look around for events going on around you and attend them. If there aren't any, then organize your own events. They don't need to be very big, but just organize events in the areas that you are interested in, you're passionate about. And I think when you have events, celebrations, it always leads to learning and awareness.
Yeah, I would say in same line, raise awareness and avoid stereotyping, and helping others to acclimate into the new surroundings. You know, when a fellow South Asian comes in, I think we should reach out and say, can we help? help you settle down and not kind of shun them away to say, okay, another one has come and, you know, we don't want to probably be seen with them. So just being with them, helping them settle into the environment would be of a lot of help.
Yeah, I agree as well. Raising awareness is a big one. And I think also sort of engaging in meaningful conversations with people where they get to learn about the diversities and intricacies of South Asian culture. And, you know, having conversations like that might help break down some misconceptions that other people might have as well. And it just, you know, makes way for a more accurate understanding of South Asian culture.
Yeah. To that point, I would say conversations with other people. It's, for me, I feel there's so much importance in the wellness aspect. And I can't stress enough, you know, in terms of, you know, the food we eat, because now, you know, we're all going towards healthy eating, you know, non-processed food. So when we look at the cuisine, the, like example, the Indian cuisine, where, you know, we've got lots of lentils and dals, the beans, they're all protein rich. So, yeah, you know, people can maybe step away voluntarily from meat eating days and substitute with the, you know, non-meat stuff like lentils and beans, which will give them the same protein. So I think those type of meaningful conversations would be good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look into the sports world, few of our athletes have actually broken that stereotype. Like, for example, Virat Kohli, he went vegan, I think 10 years ago or sometime around that time. And he transformed himself from physically. And he was not eating any meat. He only got protein sources from vegan sources, so no dairy as well. So absolutely right. There is more to our diet and cuisine. So people should definitely adopt at the healthier ways of living that we've been doing for generations.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. So we are moving on to a lot more interesting questions, I would say. It's more of a rapid fire questions. I'll go ahead with the questions and whoever wants to go ahead with the answers can proceed, okay? So the first question is, what is something that people misunderstood about you?
That being a South Asian, I'm a vegetarian. Whenever I'm in London, I'm directed towards an Indian restaurant or a curry house. Mate, that way you'll get some curry over there. No, I eat everything and I'm open to cuisines.
Yeah, that's very true. So the next question is, what are the best and the worst pieces of what career advice you have received?
I came across one on TikTok where it was to do with attachment, and it said something like, don't attach yourself to a person or a company or a place or a project, but only attach yourself to a mission and a purpose, because that way you'll maintain your peace and your power. Because if you get attached to all these other things, people and places and companies, then, you know, you end up working more for them instead of yourself. And then there's usually like a trade-off with your power and your peace as well. So that for me stuck out and I was like, that is amazing. So it stuck with me.
Thanks a lot for that, Shim. I should actually definitely note that down. I am someone who was getting attached to the projects or the work.
Yeah, I would say good career advice I've received is also that if you're working towards a promotion or working towards gaining experience in a particular specific area, then tell people about it. The same way as if you were planning to do a marathon, you tell your friends and family about it. So you must tell people and, you know, they'll help you, help support you and cheer you on as you work towards your goal and, you know, achieve your small steps towards it.
I have been given that advice too, because again, culturally, we are seen as people who do not speak up too much. So a voice on the table to be heard and to be counted, that advice has been given to me. But the one I remember categorically was about 15, 16 years ago. I was maybe 5, 6 years into my career and I was having a chat with my then HR manager. And he told me that invest in yourself, IIY. And those three letters have stayed with me forever. I pass it on to everyone that I meet as well. It says, it's not about gaining degrees. It's not about gaining education. It's about gaining knowledge. And the way you gather knowledge or understand it, it's going to take you places. So whether it's a podcast or a book or even observing two people talk, I just, on a quest to gain knowledge and investing in myself, you never know how it might come in handy.
Thank you. So the third question is, who are your favorite people to follow in business? What do you like about what they are doing?
I would say I am very impressed with leadership coach Simon Sinek. I chanced upon one of his clips, which was doing the rounds on WhatsApp. And I thought he made a lot of sense in the way he spoke about things. And since then, I've been following him. I actually have his books on my desk. So I try and read his leadership thoughts and theories. Besides that, from an Indian perspective, I do admire Indian business houses of Mahindra, Anand Mahindra's, Tata Group, and Ambani's. I think they are not only wealth creators, but they are the ones who created so many opportunities and jobs for people in India. And now, you know, they go neck to neck on certain things with the world-renowned brands. So yeah, there's lots on the Indian side that I admire as well.
I wouldn't say I've got a favorite, but I find Elon Musk really funny because I feel like he just wakes up and does something random every day. I don't know if you guys have seen his tweets, but his tweets are just so random. So yeah, sometimes when I'm bored, I just go over his Twitter to find something entertaining. But yeah, I wouldn't say he's my favorite, but he's definitely entertaining.
It's not even Twitter anymore. It's X.
Yeah,
exactly the random thing. I woke up one day and said, what happened to my Twitter? Like, it's why is it showing X? Then exactly the random thing it's just called out.
Literally, it's so funny.
Yeah, I would say I like Simon Sinek as well. And besides that, I would say I just pick up on Pancham's point that it's good to learn something every day, like whenever you can. So I'm a fan of listening to podcasts because you could be listening and doing other things at the same time. So I listen to Stephen Bartlett and Louise House, and they're both very good. And what I like about them is they cover such a huge range of topics, and it's always full of information.
I agree with Stephen Bartlett. I heard his podcast for the first time on a flight. I'm a fan of mixed martial arts. I found a mixed martial artist on his podcast. I started listening to him. It was 1.5 hours, and I just got hooked on to him. Now I follow his channel almost every day. And even if I don't listen to the full podcast, the clips that he posts on LinkedIn or wherever, I do follow him. And I think it makes a lot of sense. Such a young entrepreneur makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Thank you. So that comes to the end of the podcast, unfortunately. So a big thank you to everyone, Madhvi, Pancham, and Shem, for this insightful responses and for sharing the experiences and the thoughts associated with South Asian Heritage Month. Okay. So Priyanka, just one question there. And maybe because it's all in the same culture and we feel like, oh yeah, we have a lot to talk about, especially being from South Asian culture, you know, you have a lot of things to talk about. So you basically can go on and on and on because people always generalize it, or, you know, Hollywood always generalize it and Westerners know only that part of the whole bit. So whenever someone comes and talks to me, you know, they always ask, okay, so you guys see Na? And I'm like, oh no, we have a lot more different variety of stuff over here, you know. They don't know that, like, we have totally different breakfast in my place, and like those are already, you know, lots of different varieties, and no one knows, eh?
Exploration of cuisine in India is every 100 kilometers.
Yeah. Even every 100 kilometers just changes the whole, like, language, terrain, everything changes, actually.
Other thing that's so amazing is how, you know, in the Indian culture, we have a remedy for everything, for cough, for cold, you know, something you find in the house.
Yeah.
So as a child, I don't ever remember going to the doctors, you know, it was never, whereas here, it's like going to the doctor is such a common thing. In UK.
So these conversations are vital to how we prioritize encouraging discussions on equality in the workplace. Thank you for listening to this discussion, and please look out for more content from Delta Capita on our website, deltacapita.com, our LinkedIn page, and lastly, our Instagram @delta.capita. Thank you.